GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar.
Guest co-host Dennis Marble in Spacious Studio 7A, filling in for GH, who is in sunny FLA today. Dennis, on the PDQ door telephone line is our good friend State Senator Jim Hamper, the bean counting. See, there he's counting the beans. Listen to him right. See that? He's counting the
good
beans
morning.
Right now. Dennis, Jim Dennis.
Good morning.
Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Just counting the additional surplus that we've got on our hands. But anyway.
You have it in $1 bills in front of you on the desk?
Well, no. I was up at 3:30 this morning and spread out all over the kitchen table with all kinds of paperwork and catching up on what we have and have not voted on as far as the supplemental budget. Last week, when I first started off, I commented about a financial order that the governor had put in to move some money to buy testing equipment for the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And in a meeting yesterday, late in the day, with Commissioner Lambrew, she confirmed that, yes, they have picked up the equipment, and yes, the equipment is up and running, and the CDC is able to process anywhere between 100 and 200 tests a day with the new equipment. So, you know, that's a positive.
That is terrific. That being said, let us ask you the question of the day, Jim. If quarantine if it were to go to its extreme, God forbid it does, if quarantine for coronavirus, could you work at home for 2 weeks?
Well, which job? I mean, I carry two jobs here. One is state senator, and one is a residential carpenter. So the carpenter job, well, I'd work on my own house, which would make my wife happy. And the other one, as far as state senator goes, I think a lot of what we are doing right now, we could do electronically. Okay. Yeah, I suppose I could.
Okay. Many Mainers couldn't. And we're mm-hmm. questioning as to whether or not they could afford working 2 weeks, maybe if they don't have the sick time, if they don't have the vacation time, God forbid that they'd have to give up. And what would happen as they try to count the beans in their house?
And I think in terms of my son who loads bread trucks in Lewiston, and boy, that will put a kibosh on that, wouldn't it? Which the pictures you've seen of the empty shelves at different stores and that sort of thing, did you ever think in terms of how easily the food supply could be disrupted in Maine? You know, that's one of those, hey, let's worry about that one.
I have a friend whose partner is got a senior management position with one of the big food outfits, retail, mm-hmm. and they have been in meetings for days and days and days trying to talk about problem solving on every level of that, Jim, mm-hmm. from the customer who comes in sneezing to how do you handle this to, how, you know, all of that stuff. So, that could be threatened.
It certainly could. So that brings to mind a topic of discussion we had yesterday, which was, you know, as I was counting the additional money in the surplus.
You do a lot of counting of that, Jim.
do we divert money or set money aside to make sure CDC has enough to run on to do what they potentially have to do, and trying to pin that number down as to, you know, we're going to need to set aside how much? So that's just part of the discussions we've had.
Let me jump in with a question right there. We know that the governor, or you, last time you were on, you told us that since Maine Revenue Forecasting came out with, hey, we think we're going to have this much more coming in, mm-hmm. and then the governor would be putting forward a change package.
Yep.
Is that where one might expect to see some additional funding for the CDC within the governor's change package?
That's what I would anticipate, yes. We're still waiting for the change package to come from the administration. And we had over an hour yesterday. She met with Democrat leadership from Appropriations and Sarah Gideon and Troy Fred Jackson first, and then the Republicans came in later on in the afternoon, and we sat and we had a good conversation with the Gov for well over an hour, and discussed a whole lot of these issues. And I'm not going to go into specifics at this stage of the game, but she was getting a read from both sides as far as what we're going to do, and I appreciate. You know, and I told her so. I appreciated the fact that we could sit down and have the conversation.
Jim, let me ask you a process type question that I'm unsure of. One of the things about the spread of this internationally is it's hard to predict exactly where what's going to happen where. We were talking earlier about, I'm going to say Westchester County, but that part
New
of
Rochelle.
New York. Thank you.
New Rochelle, yeah.
And So what I'm wondering at the state level as far as apportioning limited resources go, if we can't, and I hold all of you in esteem for the work you do, but if we can't fully predict where we might most need prioritized resources, should worst case type things happen in Maine, would it make sense to try to maximize what's parked in the rainy day fund rather than starting sooner to direct resources to specific needs that might be trumped 2 weeks later?
Prioritize money in the rainy day fund.
I don't know how hard it is to put it in and get it out. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing is we got plenty of money in the checkbook right now. And
that concerns a lot of us.
The checkbook, and you know, we got the surplus, and now it's just a matter of making those decisions. And I got to rely on those who are far more well versed in where it needs to go than myself.
Jim, as far as that healthcare goes. Based on something that you just said, and I wanted to ask that of you. State Senator Shenna Bellows was on with us a couple of weeks back. And a couple of times in our discussion, she said that we have more money in our rainy day fund now than ever before. I'm paraphrasing. Please don't hold that as a hard quote on her part. I am seriously paraphrasing that. But her,
I've heard the exact same thing from different ones within the state house, and it comes from the Democrat side.
Is that true?
Well, in all reality, there was at its high point during the LePage administration, I think we were at $279 million. And then they got the indications that Riverview Psychiatric, in that the federal government was going to want to claw back payments that they had been making to us. And at its height, yes, 279, and then we dedicated $65 million to the necessity of paying off Riverview. So it depends on how you want to look at it. But you know, I say 279 was the high, and because we had that much, let's dedicate money to Riverview. And so, okay, 279 minus the 65, so it was down to 214, if you want to look at it that way. But right now, it's at 240 million, with about 400,000 a month coming in as interest.
Okay, my follow-up question to that is, the perception has been that the Mills administration has been spending money wildly, and all the money that we had saved is gone. That has been a perception that some people have. Yet hearing that in technically there is more money in the rainy day fund than before, that kind of blows that perception out of the water.
And the whole aspect of the spending wildly is really wrapped up in the fact that when she took office, there was $178 million surplus at that time. And the Trump economy is keep pouring money into the state coffers. And so that's really where the spending has happened. It's not a matter of having dipped into the rainy day fund. It's a matter of tax revenue has been pouring in like crazy.
Okay. Now I have a better understanding of that. Final moments here. You said bonds are going to be coming up soon in Augusta?
Today appropriations, we're hearing I think it's a governor's bond for $90 million for transportation plus a $15 million package. It's a package deal at 105. So 90 for transportation and 15 for broadband expansion. And then chairs, appropriations chairs have given us the indication they want to vote on some of the bonds that we've got sitting in appropriations tomorrow, a variety pack of different things.
So watch out, Jim. Here comes a question from the dumb non-economist. I saw something recently as the market was getting, you know, beleaguered. The bond market was diving as well.
Yeah.
Does that reality have any effect on a state bond package?
I don't know what that's going to do to interest rates, but that was one of the things the administration has been stressing with us as far as through the budget chief, the DAFS chief, that you know, bonding is as cheap as it's ever been. And you know, and my comment was, my daughter just signed a mortgage for 2.9% for a house, and it's like, my goodness. But state-wise, as far as bonding goes, they're figuring we can get somewhere in the 1.67% rate, which is pretty darn good.
But that's cheap money.
We're still sitting on a whole lot of debt, and therein is the concern.
2.9%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember in the late 1970s, early 1980s, my dad sharing with me that the interest rate then, post-Carter, pre-Reagan, or in the Carter administration toward Reagan, the interest rate for the house was like 18, 19.
Right. 17, 18%.
Yeah, and my wife and I, in the house we're still living in, borrowed in 1979 at 12.4. for our first mortgage.
Kids these days don't know how good they got it, do they? No, not at all.
That and 22 feet of snow, we're going to have a rough morning.
Uphill both ways.
That's right. And baked potatoes to keep my hands warm and cold potatoes for lunch, right?
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.